Cheyenne Nations, we're an Indigenous Youth Council based in Chicago, mostly on the north side, but we have members from all throughout the city and surrounding area. We were founded in 2012 with a mission to create safe space for Native youth through arts, activism, and education, and, you know, learning our own culture. And so, right now we're a group of about 10 youth now in Chicago that are, you know, strong and involved in the community and involved in what we do as a group. And so recently, one of our biggest victories would be getting five plots of land on the north side of Chicago that we now call the First Nations Garden. So it started off as me and my aunt going to community meetings and basically seeing, already knowing that there's a need for land and reconnecting to the land for the Native community. So we're going to these community meetings, Albany Park Neighbors Association, and this is just like a name, homeowners association in the neighborhood. They have their meetings open for everybody. And we started going to these meetings, and there was talk of turning the lot into a for-profit garden that would, you know, charge people for the plots, and basically exploit and further, like, gentrify the neighborhood and push out a lot of the low income and the long-time residents of Albany Park. And so, as, you know, neighbors in Albany Park and as Indigenous peoples, we felt like that wouldn't represent what we know as the neighborhood. And so we decided to start, you know, the process of, you know, writing a proposal. At first, we decided to try to partnership with this group just to bring, you know, that, you know, some space for Native people in Chicago. We didn't want, like, the whole lot. And then after the proposal was written by them, the Homeowners Association, they basically tried to write us off as, like, silent partners. They wanted the Native community to hold the lease and have the insurance for the lot, and didn't really give us room and didn't give us space to where we could have that healing space for ourselves. And so we decided to take this to the American Indian Center, who we partnership with, to write our own proposal for what the Native community wants. And in that proposal, we didn't forget about, you know, the Albany Park community. So we wrote that we will provide boxes for the Albany Park community, create a safe space for Native people, and also creating a place for, you know, non-Native people to come and see, you know, the land knowledge and the connection with the land that a lot of people view as forgotten or lost in Chicago, that Native people are still living every day. So with that, we were granted access in November to this five-plot lot, and immediately we put up two teepees just to bring awareness, you know, get people around the neighborhood asking questions, calling local government, asking questions like, what's going on in this lot? And a lot of the comments that we got, a handful of them were, you know, negative, ignorant. A good portion of them were people saying, like, there's an occupation on the lot, you know, there's homeless people. And it was just, you know, a continuation of this. And somebody even changed their Wi-Fi network, where the Wi-Fi, you could view it in the garden. And it, they changed it from, like, their last name to, you know, Ford, and then their last name. So besides that, though, like, when we're out at the garden, the people walking by asking questions, you know, it was really positive. People were excited for, you know, this lot that's been empty for 14 years. Before that, it was like the ComEd staging area. Before that, it was a printing press. So it is kind of, I would say probably 4 out of the 5 lots is just like building rubble with like some dirt on top. And then one lot is basically what we wanted to focus on, like phytoremediation, cleaning the soil, using the plants, themselves. But with this whole process, learning like the city ordinances and the rules, Anthony worked internship at the 35th Ward Alderman, Carlos Rosa, who was really supportive of us at the beginning. So he could talk more about like the process of actually like writing the proposal and the rules that the city has.
So at the time I was an intern for the 35th Ward Alderman. And so just seeing like what our group had to go through, Jamie mentioned that in Chicago the rules are always changing. There'll be one thing 1 month, and then the next month they'll have to wait 5 more years to do something because in Chicago that's kind of how things fly at the moment. And so just like the bureaucracy that the youth council and the native people have to go through just to be able to practice our culture on our own land is a bit ridiculous. You know, AJ mentioned how we want to be 501c3, and you know that's something that the city of Chicago said that's not possible. You guys can't do that. And so, in 2 years from now, everything will have to come out of the garden, and they'll bring in bulldozers to go about 2 to 6 feet down, take all of that out, and put new dirt in. Because that's just how the city of Chicago operates. And
well, we keep joking around like, dang, they're gonna come in and take our land.
And so they're gonna take all of that, they're gonna take that land, and then they're gonna put it in a landfill, and they're gonna bring it dirt from Iowa to put on top. which is not our land. And so there's a lot of like cultural barriers that we have to face with the city because you know our people that land is living, and so for us to be able to sit there and to heal that land back to what it used to be, the city just doesn't understand that. The city and like local politicians don't understand, you know, how much, you know, this tiny plot of land means to our community, to our youth council. And so, you know, when things either revolve around the garden or pop up about the garden, the community kind of gets on the defensive, and rightfully so, because, you know, if you see how big Chicago is, five plots in Chicago is large, but compared to the city, it's nothing. It's, and then at the moment, that's all we have because the city they don't recognize Native people. They haven't done anything to like help advance our people in the city. Chicago is one of the largest cities in the Midwest. We have about 65,000 people who are Native located in the city of Chicago, and they don't recognize us. And so what our youth council did was we wrote there's a land acknowledgement resolution, and so in that resolution we wanted to make sure that we acknowledge the land itself, so the waterways of Michigan, Mississippi, the Chicago River, but also acknowledge the people that have lived and still live on that land. And so that resolution was written by our youth council, was written in our own perspective, in their language, in their like legal language. And so I thought, you know, I thought that was kind of cool because, you know, Indigenous youth never get to write policy, and for us to be able to do that and tell our own story like through that way was very powerful. We wrote about genocide and deceit, and that's something at the time that the city's lawyer who worked for our former mayor, Ron Emanuel, they didn't like because what government's going to genocide against Native people. And so that unfortunately had to be taken out of the resolution for the past. But some things had slipped in our resolution that they didn't catch. Our youth council, we went into the process knowing that some of the things we wrote in there, like we knew some of these things, and we're gonna be like, well, this is an issue. When it's not an issue, but they said it's not an issue. So it passed in November, and so that's kind of like,
yeah, and so now, like, one of, like, the biggest battles, I would say, concerning the garden is, well, we've had a full season. We put in some plants to help start, like, the phytoremediation process on parts of the land. We're really just, like, weeding and pulling out, you know, the harmful invasives, like wild parsnip that could, like, actually burn your skin. And then also promoting, like, the indigenous plants that are already growing there. There's milkweed, there's an eastern version of goldenrod, that's, and then just like other plants, there's like mints that grow out there, wild onions, we brought in, you know, wild ginger, put in amaranth, and just, you know, slowly started this process. We had community come out and build us boxes. We were given, you know, loads of soil, loads of mulch, and it's all volunteer-based, all, you know, for free. Like, there's been only $5,000 put into the garden at this, like, of monetary, not including, like, our labor and time. So, you know, having this, like, so, the community so engaged in this lot, but now the city's saying, so there was laws that were changed in January that nonprofits and individual community organizations can't now own lots in the city of Chicago. They can't lease city-owned land anymore. Mm-hmm. That the land has to go through a utility company called NeighborSpace. Mm-hmm. And so what they create ownership of the land, and they're able to get like the federal money to be able to, you know, do the backhoeing, bringing water out there, and like small projects. And so again, with the city, now we have it on a busy street. The lot is on Pulaski Road. And one of their ordinances is it has to be straight lines. They want like that straight line on Pulaski. Like building faces. But for 14 years, it was an empty lot. And so now that we're using it, now they want us to put like a fence or like a stone wall. So, and then also another sort of proposed development is turning 40% of that lot into affordable housing. They're framing it as affordable housing for, they want, so in Illinois, there's no native tribes, so we can't say, like, this is housing for native people. In the city of Chicago, you can't say that. So they want us to target the native community. This same project was proposed for turning our American Indian Center into affordable housing. Mm-hmm. And the community was against it because there was no housing for the homeless communities with little to no income, no housing for our women in, you know, the sex work, and who are targeted by the missing and murdered Indigenous women epidemic. So our community was originally against it, and there's a few Native people who are still, you know, wanting to put in this Native housing. And so we found out now that the alderman wants to put in this affordable housing because it fits his agenda. He's a like very progressive, but he was like very supportive of our group. And then now, just to fit his agenda, he wants to put in this affordable workforce housing. And so taking like 40% of that lot, building housing for people who could be suffering from disease and illnesses that won't permit us to have like open fires on the lot, which we've, which was written in the proposal, us to have like multiple fires that could burn 24 hours, again, like trying to go against like these city ordinances. We wrote it off where we could spend like more than 24 hours on the block. Because in Chicago there's 11 p.m. curfew, there's supposed to be like no noise. So we wrote all of this in the proposal and it was passed. And now coming to find out, we just had a meeting with the Alderman maybe 2 weeks ago, a week ago, on Monday. So less than a week ago. Saying now that it's being targeted for the development. And something like being also an Albany Park neighbor, having in the 35th Ward, there's not many open lots. In the Albany Park area, there's not many open lots. And parking is something that's very scarce in our neighborhood. So we'll be driving around like an hour, you know, looking for parking at the end of the day. And so to build more housing with no parking seems a bit unfeasible for like the Albany Park neighborhoods. And then going back to like the indigenous perspective, you know, now they want to take 40% of our land, which is the side of the lot that we built our wigwam, which is the side of the lot that still has, you know, dirt that we can remediate. So it's you know, very, it's a lot of work because we're doing this all, you know, because we want to. So 2 years from now, we're going to have to remove everything from the garden. And as of right now, we don't know whether or not we're going to get the full lot returned to us or if it's only going to be 60%.
So the other idea that was involved with this was that we would have a separate space for Native people just to be together and not like, so it's technically legal to say Native only, right? But they could strongly encourage it. So that's kind of what we wanted to do, is have this section for our Native people just kind of come together, and their families, like also, to come together and kind of deal together. So we have, like, so we're able to teach the people of Chicago how to live in Chicago and with Chicago. But we also have that teaching and learning space in there. So we wanted to start a prairie, and we have not had, in this full, almost a full year, every time we say we're going to plant something into the ground, they're like, whoa, 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 you can't put stuff into the ground, you know? And we're like, sunflowers, tobacco, corn, like, we're not going to eat the corn. We're just going to, like, grow it and make sure that it pulls all of that stuff out of the soil. So every step we take is like, no, you can't do that, you can't do that. So we've only been appeasing like this, the part that is kind of, what is it, like, showy. So they love our teepees up there. They love that, you know, the news was over there. They love the teepees, they love the Indians, but they don't want us to practice our culture with the non-performative. So the wigwam, they don't recognize that wigwam in anything. They don't see, they just like, what is this? Because when they think of Native people, they think of teepees. So we have the teepees up, it was okay. And once we took the teepees down and threw a wigwam up, which is what would be there, everything started being like, well, what are you guys doing? What are you really doing over there? Like, oh, you're not going to have powwows over there. You're not going to see me dance there. So they're like, no, we're just going to plant our, you know, we're going to plant some tea. We're going to plant some foods and we're just going to hang out with each other. We spent all last winter 2-3 times a week sitting in the teepee, like shooting shit, you know, like just hanging out. And they didn't view that as us practicing our culture. They didn't, because we weren't singing and dancing. We weren't out there dressed up. We're just a bunch of, you know, brown kids just sitting in the teepee around fire, you know,
pulling out concrete.
Pulling out, yeah, like we were literally pulling out these gigantic, digging out these gigantic boulders from the ground because we were going to put trees in. But trees are permanent structures, so you can't put the trees in. you know, like there's all these rules, and then like Monday when they're like, oh, or it was 2 weeks ago when we found out, oh, they're going to come and take our land, you know. He's like, no, we'll get land back. I was like, yeah, but that's not my land. You know, like, I don't want bad soil. I don't want Indians come in and saying, oh, we're going to live here. And like the barman would be like, oh, yes, like finally. And then they're going to just take it and like throw it away and pretend like it's nothing, like it's garbage. So I was very offended. Like as I started, I'm like, what? Like almost yelling at this guy. He's like, what is going on? Like he did not understand. He thought like, oh, this is great. So when they kept saying win-win-win situations. But it's just this cultural misunderstanding that they keep having, and they won't give us the room to teach them to like, this is how it's always been here. And they're not catching up to us. They keep trying to pull us back to where they are. You know, we want to be over here now. Like, we're in the future now. You guys are just, you know, still just thinking like it's part of our culture to always think about the future. And there's this big popular thing, indigenous futurism. It's like this big thing now. But that's how we are as Indian people, you know. That's how we've always been. We've always been these futurists. So when they were telling us we have to put in a brick wall, they're like, oh, can you even have remnants of old Chicago? And I was like, I would love that, you know. I would love to see the old Chicago, and then on the inside of that could be the new Chicago. This is what we're going towards. We're going to grow our own food. We're going to have connections.
Want everybody in Chicago to be able to have those things. Yeah. And that's kind of what we've done on that end. But this month, so I now work for a new alderman full time. And so our youth council also co-wrote an ordinance this time, which would change our municipal code to abolish Columbus Day and turn it into Indigenous Peoples Day. But what's different about our ordinance is we included the communities that were directly impacted by Columbus, which included the Islander communities, so like Cuba, Puerto Rico, and so we included them in our ordinance. And they're a very large group in Chicago, but they aren't heard as much as the Native community. So
yeah. So like, there's always that we're taught in school. Columbus came to America, so people associate Columbus with Native Americans. When really Columbus didn't really he set forth the whole the Atlantic trade, but he didn't impact like my people, the Anishinaabe people. He impacted people, you know, on in Haiti, Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, and so kind of like putting their voice forward, those communities' voice forward, because they've been groups who've been working for decades against Columbus Day. And so, you know, our community is growing, and before there was an agreement with the American Indian Center and the Italian Heritage Group in Chicago that said we're not gonna go against Columbus Day, and so the same Italian Heritage Group before the city council meeting where the proposal being introduced that morning, they bought the city council breakfast. again, like as youth, we're breaking like these barriers that even sometimes our own community, you know, put for us. We're wanting to bring Native people into the conversations in city council. We want to be able to understand like the legal jargon. And that's something that our youth council's been very proactive on. Just like overall being able to navigate, you know, the modern life and reconnecting with our knowledge systems in the indigenous way.
Maybe there can be a joint Q&A. Now, is that a good time for the transition?
Yes.
So the I've been active in vital irrigation in the past myself, so I'm just curious about the soils and what you're trying to deal with pollution.
Yeah, so we haven't had like a full testing of the soil. We did test for lead, because in Chicago that's one of the biggest contaminants. I'm not sure of like the exact reading, but it was elevated. So it didn't pose like an immediate threat. They told us like make sure that the soil doesn't, you know, dry up and turn to dust, so we're not breathing it in.
You mentioned the printing press, so that would have had toxic chemicals.
Yeah. And so for 14 years, this garden hasn't had anything more than just someone coming out to mow. And so we didn't, like I said, we haven't had like full testing done of the soil since we know now that all of it's gonna get taken and put somewhere else. So I don't think we have like put our immediate like our time into getting it tested, but just from like our knowledge systems, we know, you know, the sunflowers help break down those heavy metals, so they settle and pull up certain toxins. And being like taking out those plants at the end of the season, so they don't decompose right back into the soil. But the way we were doing it, we wanted to put, you know, slowly introduce the prairie, a native prairie, which in turn, if you have, you know, the biodiversity, it will clean up all of the toxins in time. So that's the way we wanted to do it. You know, we had a 5-year goal of what we wanted, you know, in the lot, but then we had like a 15-year goal of, you know, introducing plants, taking out, switching out, you know, invasives for like indigenous plants. Because we have like butterflies out there that host on like the wild carrots. So we don't want to take out those wild carrots and leave, you know, these butterflies with nothing to host on. So we are introducing, or we were promoting, it's slipping my mind right now exactly like the specific plants, but we don't want to take out, you know, something without an alternative. And so, like, so we didn't want to think of this as, you know, let's get this toxic soil out, put in new soil, you know, and everything's fine. But this toxicity goes somewhere else to a landfill. So it's going to have to be dealt with in the future. So that's kind of like our thought process on like the phytoremediation, which I would say is like an indigenous way of thinking of it. Just not exactly what do we need to target right now, but rather like in the long run, we want like the biodiversity up. We want the way we wanted to do it now is threatened by the backhoeing of the lot, which as of right now we can't find a way around it. And so in 2 years from now, we're going to have to restart.
Would it be okay to have questions for both? Before the questions are surging up, did you want to speak specifically about the existence of solidarity or that was left out of your
I could talk a little bit about that. But first of all, I just want to just, it does my heart good to hear the young people just really. Iowa, which is across the river. she checked on Facebook and they were sending, what was going on up there and the struggle and the fights and the bulldozing of the areas. And so, she, of course, she was really upset and it brought it to the coalition's attention. She called me up and I could tell in her voice and she was practically crying. And so, I said, I had no idea, so I checked out Facebook myself, saw what was going on, and it was just really just devastating. So within a week and a half, we organized, at the time we weren't Sage Sisters yet, but a week and a half, the coalition and their supporters, we organized, rally. Organized a rally downtown at Clare Park. Didn't know we had to get a permit to do that, but we did anyway. And contacted the community, contacted supporters, and words got out. And met rallied at Clare Park, had a sound system. Danny's very helpful with that. Had a drum. Lockwood and the drums, and just had and did things in an indigenous good way. We had prayer, we had smudging, we offered tobacco to the Mississippi River there, and we spoke what was on our hearts, what was on our minds. Nothing was scripted, it just whatever came out at that time. And had many speakers, like Christine Novas, who was receiving sovereignty. She was there. And so many of us just spoke. And also sang and offered prayer. And I don't think we had the coverage that time. I mean, we didn't want coverage, but we just wanted people to, we were walking along the park there to stop and listen to what was going on. And a month later on, we held another rally, same place. More coverage, a little bit more coverage. And then a month after that, in October, Sage Sisters was created out of the assistance of waterkeepers and the indigenous peoples in the camps and protectors there. So our, I guess, intention was just to bring awareness into our community and ask for support from people in the community here. Also to provide them what's going, what's actually going on up there, because there's hardly any coverage on any of course, local news, none, national news, practically none. And to just teach or make aware of what's going on, how you can help. At the time, we were encouraging people to donate to the camps up there because they were requesting items. We collected donations, Josie had her family transported them up to Cannonball. She gave a report on what was happening. The security up there was very ominous. The AK rifles all over the place. They were took up residency at the Casino Hotel there. Of course, they had families there with their children, and they have these militant presence there with AK rifles, and they're in this place with families, And it's just, Josie said, it's just unbelievable what was happening on her reservation. So. We did also divestment marches downtown Davenport, where Wells Fargo, Chase, the financial banks that were there, to encourage those people there who had accounts in these financial institutions that were supporting DAPL. That you know where your money is being spent, you know where your money is going, and a lot of them didn't know this was happening. So there was support there. community. We work with other environmental groups, the Sierra Club, the Waterkeepers, this area. One gentleman from the Waterkeepers was also doing the same thing, but along with the Green River, there is some toxicity going into the river there. And he had his own agenda with those people. And so he was very knowledgeable in the waterways here, dealing with the Army Corps of Engineers here in Rock Island. And with his help and other people's help, with the creation of the environmental impacts statement that everyone helped devise, which we encouraged people, you know, to sign this, and which stated that we are urging and we want the Army Corps of Engineers to do a complete environmental impact statement study of the whole river system, you know, that the DAPL was going through, you know, it's cutting through North Dakota, south, let's see, north, eastern Iowa, crisscrossing into south, northwestern Iowa into southeastern Iowa, and then coming into Illinois and ending down at South Illinois. And also that the toxicity that would be released, you know, would leave. And so we had different fundraisers, we had environmental impact statements there. A lot of people did sign to take them home. We were encouraged to take it. They also had it notarized too. And then the originals we sent to the Army Corps of Engineers in Rock Island. We kept copies. And then Trump took over, and then that was a little bit discouraging. But we still go out there. We encourage people to divest, you know, those financial institutions, ask questions, support what environmentalists are doing. And then also another thing, issue that we've been dealing with is also with the MMIW, murdered and missing indigenous women. We found in this area, there's an Esquimalt woman who's been missing for the past 5 years, Rita Tapaki. We contacted her family. They've been going to different valleys too within the last 2 years or so. We held a MMIW rally. Shrewd Park, just down from the Mississippi River, a year ago in July. I invited the Pataki family to come. Christine Novus came. We had speakers, you know, from different areas. We included speakers from women's organizations here in the group and the Quad Cities and the Mexican American community. We invited a lot of different groups to come in. They're very supportive. Another woman that we also honor and want to keep her name going is